Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Monday. It is the 12th of July, 2021. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello.
I'm glad to have you with us, even in the midst of a very difficult time for you.
Greetings from a sad England.
A very sad England. Also with me today, word on the street is he is here and ready to rock. I have Dave Hamilton. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for having me. And my condolences for your country's loss of a sporting match this weekend, Charlotte.
It's a very sad time for us all. It did not, in fact, come home.
Yeah.
It did not come home. There you go. Not. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you've heard, Dave, but football's life.
We call it soccer. Right.
Yeah, we're gonna have to do a Ted Lasso and be a goldfish.
Yeah,
there you go.
Charlotte's gonna channel her inner goldfish for this. Yeah. So, that's actually like it's a topic, of course, today because we have no choice. But the thing we really wanted to talk about was something else that happened over the weekend, and that was the birthday of the App Store and also the iPhone 3G launch, because those two things came at basically the same time.
Yes. iOS App Store first appeared on July the 10th, 2008. So it's a teenager.
Yes.
Stand well back. Things are about to get difficult. I mean, I could probably go there because I think things probably are. I think it is going to have some difficult teenage times, the App Store.
Oh, yes.
But so there's that. And as you say, that it was kind of part of the iPhone 3G launch, which I know you guys found was a significant moment at the time. And because the iPhone 3G actually came out on July 11th. So over the weekend.
It was the day after the App Store, right?
Exactly.
Rolled out the App Store and had 24 hours of tech support disaster. Because it wasn't just the App Store, right? It was the latest version of iOS plus the App Store. And it did not go well.
No. And just to set the scene a bit, there was no such thing as an over-the-air update. You had to take that 30-pin cable and plug it into the side of your computer and wait for iTunes to download the entire operating system, which happened for people with varying degrees of success, because for its time, it was a really big file and everybody wanted it, and that made it hard to get. And then...
You know, it kind of reminded me of Big Sur. Now that we're talking about it, when Big Sur came out in September, I think it was September, whatever it was in the fall, like that was the afternoon of cascading failure where we couldn't even launch apps on our Catalina Max, let alone try to download Big Sur.
It was not a happy afternoon.
It was not.
No, it wasn't. But it was a weird afternoon. I don't want to rehash it, but now that we're talking about it, it reminds me of the day that the App Store launched, because it was the same kind of, you know, cascading failure of everything to do with Apple's servers online.
And we went through a few iterations of these with iPhones because before there were over the air updates, and I don't remember, that still feels like a recent thing to me that you can just tell your phone go from, you know, 14 to 15 and just hit it and, you know, come back a little while later and it's fine. That still feels new to me for some reason, because it used to be 100% of them where you plug your phone into your computer and let iTunes take care of it for you. So that was a thing that I remember about it. And I also remember, like you were saying, Dave, like other phones were also having trouble. So people who had the original iPhone couldn't go update their operating system on the one that they already had and things like that. And we went through like a few, I think we went through one or two more iterations where like everything happened on the same day before they started staggering things. So then we started getting iOS, the new version of iOS, well before people's phones started showing up. If I'm not mistaken, that became an earlier thing, but it sort of came from things like this where like now nobody can do anything. And remember, at this point, we were only dealing with literally two models of iPhone. There was the original one and the new one, and that was all of them.
That's right. Yeah, because this was iOS 2.0.
And it was phone OS. It wasn't even iOS at that point.
It was phone.
Phone OS.
I think it was iPhone OS too, right? It wasn't OS. It was iPhone OS too.
I think
that's
then
right.
It became iPhone OS or Phone OS, and then it became like, yeah, it was Phone OS for a while, and then it was iPhone was OS, it? And then it was iOS. Like, I don't remember the order, but
yeah, it was the product launch was the artist we now know as the iOS App Store.
And, yeah. Well, what's interesting about that, though, is like reading through the feature list of iPhone OS 2 on at least on Wikipedia, like they talk about how, you know, there's updates to mail and contacts and calendar, which were truly at the time they were more important. They were the most important thing about this, right? Because these things, as we mentioned, I think last week, I don't know, I can't remember where we talk about these things anymore. but iPhone OS 1 was very limited in its feature set, right? And so, like, I did not have an original iPhone. I bought one and made my wife use it because I was using a Treo 650, which did more than my iPhone. That's why I didn't move to it. And the 3G with iPhone OS 2 was the first iPhone I used. And it was because of these things, the updates to mail, contacts, and calendar. And so it's appropriate that those are listed first in the release notes. And then there were some enterprise enhancements and things like that. And then there's the other list of things that includes, you know, like Cisco VPN support and this, that, and the other thing. And one of the things in the other listing is App Store, a digital storefront allowing users to buy or download apps. Like, it was a big deal at the time, but it wasn't nearly the big deal that it is now.
Right.
You know, like, because there were no apps.
And it's rather taken on life of its own. Well,
indeed.
The initial apps, as I understand it, and maybe you guys can tell me what you first downloaded from the App Store. apparently, some of the first apps included MLB at Bat, the New York Times, and eBay. There was also things like Travelocity on there.
I certainly remember downloading the New York Times app, but the app that to me, it was the first app I downloaded, but also sort of the catalyst to the App Store existing in my mind, and this is definitely not necessarily the universal view on this, is Twitterific. And the reason is Twitterific was, I think, again, my viewpoint, the most popular app for jailbroken iPhones, right? Like, Apple did an about face on this. They did not want an app store. Steve Jobs was adamant about not allowing third-party apps on the iPhone because of how unstable things like the Treo and other phones that supported apps were.
Well, and to your point, Dave, I remember you telling us, because we talked about this in our meeting last week, that you were like, I did the dance and got everything working the way it needed to be, and I wasn't going to mess with that, which is why your wife ended up with the iPhone and not you. Like, I did all
the Treo.
The Treo. Like, and you stuck to that because you were like, no, it all works now. I'm solid.
Yeah, but it was not. But I also understood why Apple was doing what they were doing and not allowing third-party apps, because it took me, a geek, you know, probably a month.
Yeah.
And this was collaborating with my brother, who's also a geek, on getting our Treo 650s set exactly the right way so that they did all these amazing things and didn't just crash or burn their batteries out all the time.
Right.
So Apple's idea with the iPhone made absolute sense at the time. No app store.
Yeah. Web clips are good enough. That was what we were supposed to be believing.
No, they weren't. But it was like, you want a device that's stable and for the masses, and nothing out there was for the masses yet. Like, that was definitely true. And then, you know, but app developers, we call them app developers now, but, you know, developers wanted to write for this thing, and they figured out how to jailbreak it so that you could install third-party apps, because obviously there were apps on this thing, mail, contacts, calendar, right? Like, you know, and Twitterific.
They were just only made by Apple at this point.
They just, exactly. And Twitterific was one of the first ones that really kind of showed why you should have a third-party app market, right? It was like, here's a well-written app. Everybody is wanting to use it because, you know, Twitter was becoming a thing, and it was, but it worked. And I don't know. Obviously I can't know what happened inside Apple, although we've gotten with the recent lawsuit, we've gotten a lot of insight into this, that we never thought we would get. But I have to think that app probably played no small part in convincing Apple, you know, was it Bertrand Soulier, right, who lobbied for an app store? I have no doubt that he was aware of that, and many others was like, look, these people are doing this anyway. We can either participate or we can be left out of this. Right. You know, and so it was like, let's participate. So it was, I don't know. It's just, it's hard to talk to someone that never knew life with an iPhone or with phones without an app store about how significant that about face was and how fast it happened. Like, that's the amazing thing. It didn't take till iPhone OS 4. It was 1 year. That's it. It's really amazing for Apple to do.
Although obviously at that point, not everything went in. I mean, you were telling your story of Twitterific makes me think of the much more painful saga of people who wanted to use Facebook on an Apple mobile device, you know, an iPhone, and then later iPad, taking a long time to actually get a Facebook app.
Totally. Oh, yeah. But that was on Facebook.
But it didn't sort of check, although the App Store came relatively quickly, the transition from here is the place you can sell the app to companies of various sizes making the product that went through the shop was took a bit of time.
Well, and that, I guess you're appropriately crystallizing what I was trying to say is that and failing at. So thank you. Is that, you know, it was the crazy ones, the indies, who proved the need for third party apps. And then Apple had to go and lobby all of these larger companies to build apps for their new platform. Yeah. Right. Like it wasn't like it is today where it's like, well, yeah, if you're going to have an app, it like. Duh, yeah. It's got to be on iPhone.
Clubhouse, the hottest app in the world, started only on iOS.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of apps do. Like it's, you know, But that's, you're right. That wasn't the case initially. It was, you know, here's all these little indie apps. And then, let's like, I have no doubt that Apple did a lot to get the New York Times to agree. It wouldn't surprise me if Apple wrote the New York Times app. To be honest, the first version of it.
Oh yeah.
If only. Oh, now I want to know that. I also sort of coming at it from a person whose introduction to Apple products was not mobile devices. First of all, because when I first started using Apple products, the iPhone didn't exist.
Sure.
But was through, you know, laptops and desktops. The App Store concept was, you know, slightly. You know, we were just used to downloading the software you wanted onto your computer. And then the kind of paradigm shifted from mobile devices. And then obviously we now have app stores on the Mac as well. And now even your watch has an app. You know, it's been an interesting shift. And I kind of start, like, I think when you were using a Trio, Dave, I was using a BlackBerry, may it rest in peace. And it's that kind of had a bit of that concept, but again, you could download all sorts of trash accidentally, you know, through a web browser basically. And we've discussed lots, haven't we, Kelly, this idea of, you know, when people, us being annoyed and big companies being annoyed that the only way to get through to an Apple iPhone is via the App Store that Apple controls. And we know that there's big regulatory stuff coming Apple's way on this.
Yeah.
But sort of some of our, I think those of us who had, and you guys were using this long before me, have memories of what the alternative was like. Maybe might have a bit more sympathy with Apple's point of view on this.
It's the watching it evolve was very interesting, like from the, like, you can do it on the web and that's fine, just fine, to there's an app store now was just always sort of interesting to me, because like I knew people that put together what was it called, iPhone Dev Camp, I think it was, in like 2007 and 2008, like before there was an app store, there were people getting together and like building apps that you could run on your iPhone. And I remember that being a thing that happened, and like there were some folks from Portland that showed up, I think it was in San Francisco, and it was a fascinating thing to watch. And then to see how eventually the iPhone ended up driving innovation, like the whole reason AT&T ended up with as much 3G network as they had was because when the iPhone 3G came out and everybody bought one, there was no 3G anywhere. And so AT&T sort of had to play catch up on that. That's one of the things that I remember is a bunch of nerds in Portland would get together and everybody was running Twitter on their phone and we were taking down cell towers in the vicinity of where we were having our events. So that's the thing that I remember is pointing out the infrastructure trouble in
I want to know what the first app you downloaded was, Kelly.
Dave said
his was Twitterific.
Yeah.
Because I know you definitely queued outside a store for an iPhone 3G.
I absolutely did.
So what was the first store app you downloaded?
I'm reasonably sure it was the lightsaber app. So you wave your phone back forth and it goes, and if you hit your hand, you know, it goes, makes lightsaber noises. I downloaded that one because,
thank you very much, Kelly.
The gyroscope stuff in it was super cool to me, which is part of what I was interested in. And I think hot on the heels of that was Evernote because it would scan the words out of your pictures. And so you could take pictures of people's business cards. It's like the first thing I ever did with it, take pictures of business cards. And then you could search Evernote for like, I know I met Charlotte at that thing. And you could type, I could type your name and it would show me the picture I took of your business card, which at the time was a mind-blowing thing that you could do.
Laughing now because that type of feature was such a big part of what Apple made of iOS and iPadOS 15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that you can do it natively in the camera instead of having someone else do it for you. And then I think the other one I downloaded was like right at the time was Shazam. Because pointing my phone at that and finding out who sings that song was something that I found infinitely valuable. And I still use that constantly to this day.
That's right. Because Shazam
was its own thing.
Of course, it was its own thing. But it was announced at that WWDC when iPhone OS 2 came out, right? Mm-hmm. It was that year.
Yeah, it was minute that they were like, you can find out who sings this song. And I was like, oh, well, now I'm getting one. So,
yeah, so that app was effectively announced at the Stump the Experts panel, if it can be called that, at WWDC, which was this late night. And I say late night, it started at maybe 8 p.m. or something, but certainly not during the day. You know, it was this post dinner thing, which was quite irreverently handled. And it was essentially a game show between the audience and the experts, which was this panel of like 30 people on stage. And there were ways that the audience could earn points. And there were ways, of course, that the experts could earn points.
Yeah.
And one way the audience could earn points was the Apple Design Awards happened before it. And then there was about a 30-minute break where they cleared the stage and cleared the house and got things set up. And then the next, session started, the Stump the Experts started, and there would be music playing during the break. Mm-hmm. And if you had been there before and knew that recognizing the songs that were played during the break would earn the audience points, you could pay attention and make a little list for yourself. And, but these were really obscure songs that Mark Harmon would find, so that you had to like really be in the know. Right. Because there was no other way. It was like you either recognize the song and know it or you simply don't. Right.
Right.
And so, there would occasionally throughout the night, there'd be somebody that would come up and say, I'd like to name a song. And, and Mark would say, OK, which one? And this particular time, this gentleman at the microphone said, all of them. and like you could drop a pin in the room.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And he proceeded to do it. And, everybody in the room is like, what just happened? And so that was the question Mark asked from the stage. It's like, okay, like, did you get access to my playlist somehow? Like, how did you cheat?
I'm not sure you're that good.
This was this irreverent thing. And so it was definitely an antagonistic attitude, between the crowd and the hosts, at least, especially Mark. And the guy's like, I wrote an app, and everybody's like, what? He's like, yeah, I leveraged the Music Genome Project. And he quickly explained what he did. And it was like, oh my God, like it blew everyone's mind was instantly blown by all of this. Yeah, and it earned the audience quite a number of points, as you
might imagine. And then Apple bought it.
Yeah.
Well, but that took a long time for Apple to buy it.
Yeah, it did.
They had a profitable run for a decade before Apple bought it. So
the thing that I remember about it is that was sort of the show off. Like if people were like, what does your phone do that's so special? Or like, why'd you buy an iPhone? That kind of thing. Like back when you were still sort of justifying having any Apple gear, I would pull it out and I would go, I can tell you who sings that song that's playing right now. And what? Yeah, watch. And then Shazam always came back with like, yeah, this is who it is, or whatever. And that's a thing that I remember using a lot, even before we got to other stuff like Bump, I think was another one that was really big, like 2008. You could share your contact with somebody by bumping your phones against each other.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, those are the ones that I remember as people really exercising a bunch of creativity to do something with a phone that had never been done before, which was the part that I thought was pretty great. So yeah, if you have memories about this, we would definitely like to hear them. I want to know what the first app is that you downloaded on your device and what device that was. You can get us at observations@macobserver.com, at TMO Daily on Twitter, or by leaving comments in the show notes. Dave, thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Always glad to have you. And Charlotte, as always, it's a pleasure having you here. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I wish you all the best in this very difficult time for your country. So that will do it. I'm your host, Kelly Gamon. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other. Let's be careful out there.